The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
What happens when the roar of a sold-out stadium is silenced by a single, anonymous keystroke?
And the players, these digital athletes we see on screen, are no longer in control of their own game.
That's the question at the heart of what we're exploring today. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rachel.
And this is The Invisible Controller.
You know, Mark, I have to admit, my interest in this started from a pretty personal place. My nephew he's completely obsessed with esports. He follows the teams, the players, he wants to go pro. And when I see the sheer amount of money and pressure on these kids, some of them still teenagers.
It's a perfect target.
It's a perfect target. The vulnerability there it's staggering. And it made me wonder what kind of predators that must attract.
For me, it was the opposite side of the same coin. I remember watching my first League of Legends World Final. The sheer skill, the strategy. It was like watching a high-speed chess match played by a symphony orchestra. It felt pure. But the moment an industry hits $1 billion, that purity gets complicated.
It gets corrupted. And that's where our story begins today. We're not just talking about cheating. We're talking about a vast, clandestine network operating in the shadows.
We're talking about the dark web and its deep, unsettling connection to the world of esports. We'll be looking at everything from sophisticated match-fixing rings run from anonymous forums to cyber attacks that can bring a multi-million-dollar tournament to its knees.
And later in the show, we'll do something I'm still not quite sure how we pulled off. We're going to talk to someone who was on the inside. A former dark web operator who didn't just observe this world, he helped build the tools used to manipulate it.
He's the ghost in the machine. So the question we're asking today is a big one. In an arena where fortunes are won and lost in milliseconds, who is really pulling the strings?
And how deep does the rot actually go?
To answer that, you have to stop thinking about it as individual acts of cheating. It's not. It's an economy. A fully-fledged, disturbingly efficient marketplace that operates completely in the shadows.
A marketplace? You mean, like there are listings? You can go shopping for a compromised tournament?
You can go shopping for the tools to compromise it. Think of it less like a single criminal and more like a service industry. On these hidden forums, you can buy bespoke malware designed to be undetectable by the latest anti-cheat software. You can hire a team to launch a DDoS attack against a star player at a precise moment in a match.
Wait, a DDoS attack? Just so we're clear, that's when they flood a player's internet connection so they lag out or get disconnected?
Precisely. Imagine you're a sniper in a championship match. You have one shot, and in the half second you're about to pull the trigger, your screen freezes. By the time it comes back, the moment is gone. The game is lost. To the audience, it just looks like a technical issue, an unlucky internet problem.
But it wasn't luck. Someone paid for that to happen. That's terrifying, because how do you even prove that? The player just looks like they choked.
You can't. That's the elegance of it from their perspective. It creates plausible deniability. And the cost for these services it's trivial. For what amounts to pocket change for these betting syndicates, you can rent a botnet powerful enough to cripple a player's connection at will.
So, it's not even about being better at the game anymore. It's about who has the resources to manipulate the infrastructure around the game.
It adds a whole new invisible layer to the competition. And we're not just talking about knocking one player offline. We've seen evidence of attacks targeting the tournament servers themselves, causing delays, forcing restarts, creating chaos that can be exploited.
What's the end game with that? Just sowing discord?
Sometimes, but more often, it's about influencing live betting. If you know a match is about to be paused or disrupted, you can place bets accordingly. It's a form of insider trading, but the information you're trading on is an attack you're about to launch yourself.
My God. So you have these kids, like my nephew dreams of being, who've dedicated their entire lives to mastering a game. Hours and hours of practice, developing reaction times faster than the blink of an eye.
And all of that skill can be nullified by someone with a credit card and a grudge, or more likely, a financial stake in them losing.
And the prize pools for these tournaments are, what now? Tens of millions of dollars for a single event?
The International for Dota 2 had a prize pool over $40 million. When that kind of money is on the table, the incentive to find an edge, any edge, becomes immense.
An immense, corrupting pressure. It changes the entire nature of the sport. It's not just about who's the best player anymore. It's about who's the most secure.
Exactly. And that security isn't just about having the fastest, most stable internet connection. That's the frightening evolution here. The weak point they're exploiting now isn't the technology.
Wait, you mean they're going after the players themselves, not just their hardware?
Why attack the machine when you can compromise the operator? It's cleaner, more effective. We've seen evidence of syndicates running long-term social engineering campaigns. They don't just show up with a bag of cash.
What does that even look like? Do they slide into their DMs?
It can start that simply. Or on a Discord server. They'll pose as a fan, maybe a fellow aspiring gamer. They build a rapport over weeks, months. They become a friend, a confidant, someone the player can vent to after a tough loss, away from the pressure of their coach and teammates.
Oh, that's insidious. They're isolating them, finding the cracks in their support system.
And then, once that trust is established, the hook comes out. It's never, hey, throw the championship for 50 grand. It's softer. Man, that was a tough beat. You know, my cousin runs a private betting site. You could make back what you lost in bonuses tonight. Easy. Just a small bet against your rival team in the next round.
And once the player makes that first bet, they have them. Because betting on your own sport, even if it's not on your own match, is almost always a breach of contract.
It's leverage. From there, it escalates. Maybe just don't pick your best character in the first round. Give them a little advantage. The requests get bigger, the threats become more explicit, and the player is trapped.
But I don't get it. These players, they're at the top of their game. They're making good money from salaries, sponsorships, prize money. Why would they risk everything for what?
You're thinking of the superstars, the ones on the cover of magazines. But for every one of them, there are 100 players just trying to hang on. Players whose contracts are up for renewal, who are in a slump, who have family money problems back home. The syndicates do their homework. They don't target the untouchable star. They target the hungry, the scared, the desperate.
So they're preying on their vulnerability. It's psychological warfare.
It is. And think about the environment. These are often teenagers or kids in their early 20s, living in a team house thousands of miles from home. Their entire life is the game. The pressure to perform is monumental. It's a perfect breeding ground for this kind of manipulation.
It just feels so lonely. I mean, don't the teams, the organizations, have safeguards for this? Don't they protect their own players?
They try. They have seminars. They have rules. But there's a conflict of interest, isn't there? What happens if a player comes to his manager and says, "I've been approached"? That's a potential scandal. It could void a multi-million dollar sponsorship deal. It casts a shadow over the entire organization.
So there's a huge incentive to just handle it quietly, or to not know about it at all.
The system encourages silence. The player is afraid to speak up for fear of losing their career, and the organization is afraid of the fallout if the story gets out. The result is that the player is left to face these predators completely on their own.
My God. So the very industry they've dedicated their lives to, it offers them no real protection when the wolves come to the door.
And that's the core of it, isn't it? The silence, the isolation. And it's in that isolation that these operators thrive. It's why we felt it was so critical to actually hear from one of them.
This is the interview we mentioned at the top of the show with the person who built some of these tools. I have to say, Mark, I'm still a little shaken by it.
We've disguised his voice, of course. He calls himself Proxy. And the first thing I asked him was, why? What's the motivation? I expected to hear about money or ideology or something. His answer was colder.
He just said, Because the vulnerability was there. It's a puzzle. If a system has a flaw, it's meant to be exploited.
No emotion. No malice. Just logic. He described crafting social engineering scripts the way a programmer would describe writing code. Finding the emotional keywords, the right time to deploy a certain phrase to maximize a player's anxiety or gratitude. It was all just variables in an equation to him.
And the most chilling part for me was when he talked about the future. He said, and I'm quoting here, "Everyone is focused on the game. The real game is the data around the game. Biometrics, sleep patterns, private conversations. That's the next frontier. You don't need to hack the server if you know the star player only got 3 hours of sleep because of a fight with his girlfriend."
It turns the players themselves into a walking, talking security flaw.
It makes them the target. And listening to him, it just reframes this whole thing for me. We see these shiny tournaments, the incredible skill, the millions of dollars. But underneath it, there's this parasitic ecosystem that's feeding on the pressure and the insecurity that the main stage creates.
And it's an ecosystem that I think is here to stay. That's my big takeaway from all of this. This isn't a problem you can just solve with better anti-cheat software or a new set of regulations. As long as there is that much money and that much pressure in one place, there will always be a proxy looking for a flaw in the system.
See, I don't know if I can be that cynical about it. Maybe I'm just thinking about my nephew, but it feels like the solution has to be more human. It has to be about building support systems that are stronger than the ones the manipulators can create. Real psychological support, financial literacy, a culture where a player can put their hand up and say, "I'm in trouble," without fearing that their career is over.
A culture of protection rather than a culture of silence.
Right. Because you can't patch a person like you can a piece of software. The vulnerability he talked about, it's not a bug. It's just being human.
So where does that leave us? As we've seen, the threat is evolving. It's moved from the servers to the players, from the code to the psyche. And the question of who is really in control, it's more complicated than ever.
It leaves me wondering what happens next, and who is going to step up to protect these players, if not the industry itself.
A lingering question, and perhaps the most important one. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the shadows of the arena.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Mark. This has been The Invisible Controller.
Bye-bye.